Hey guys, welcome back to the Morning Update podcast. So today is Easter Saturday, which I mean, I didn't even know was an actual holiday. I always celebrate Good Friday and Easter Sunday, but today's a holiday and it's a very good holiday. So it's a little bit of a shorter episode, and we added in some more fun stories for, I guess you can take them as you wish, but you'll see what we mean. Yeah, but let's get into our first story of the day. So there's this new show on Amazon Prime called The House of David. And I've been hearing it's a really good show. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I've only seen like half of the first episode and I thought it was pretty good. But John, maybe you have some more to say about that.
No, I haven't seen it either. I just heard that, oh, here's a kind of biblical Christian show that topped the charts on Netflix. And I just thought that was a pretty significant thing. You don't get a ton of kind of Christian media that is super successful, but yeah, it did pretty good.
Yeah, so looking at the all-important Rotten Tomatoes meter, it actually has a 91% popcorn meter. So if you
Oh,
don't
wow.
like, yeah, so if you don't like our opinion based off like half an episode, then you can take this from here. 91% of people who watched it love it. And
But I imagine the critics are a little bit harsher.
oh, they're pretty close. They're 71%.
All right.
It's not too bad, you know.
No.
So yeah, you know, I think it looks like all people, both people who watch movies professionally for whatever reason and regular human beings, and they all seem to
What,
love the movie.
you don't have 500 letterboxed reviews in your pocket?
No.
There are those people out there.
I mean, I suppose.
So the biggest news of today, and it's kind of been the rolling drama of this past week, is on deportations, and specifically on deporting what the Trump administration describes as dangerous criminal migrants to this super prison, kind of America's Siberian camp in El Salvador. And it looks like today the Supreme Court is halting deportations under the 1798 Alien Enemies Act, which kind of says that you can regard these dangerous criminal aliens as wartime enemies that have to go immediately. And the Trump administration had kind of used that as a way to bypass the court's gridlock, but now the courts want to bring back the gridlock, which possibly, like, as we've seen with this Abrego Garcia case, if you don't have people get their day in court, you're going to end up sweeping some people up that aren't actual violent gang members. Which, as important as it is to get, and I think 99% of the American public would be all on board with saying, we have to get violent criminal gang members out of the country. And we don't care too much if they end up in a really crappy El Salvador prison. We also really don't want to end up sweeping up just either American citizens, or I think in Abrego Garcia's case, he's not an American citizen, but he should still get like a chance to argue why he wasn't in a gang.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I think that a lot of this is kind of an issue that Democrats talked about a little bit. So it sounds weird to say, but you know, back when like Biden was president, they said that you need comprehensive new laws in order to do anything with the border. Well, it turns out that's actually somewhat true. Like you can block people from coming in, but it looks like with the Alien Enemies Act, it looks like Congress might actually just have to pass a new law in order to stop these courts.
Which can be used as an excuse. I think the Biden administration would use as an excuse of like, well, these countries aren't agreeing on something and blah, blah, blah. And they would be able to use the law as an excuse to not do anything. But now the law is hardening, partially because the courts are not exactly this administration's friend. against achieving these immigration goals.
Right. We'll see how this continues to play out because, they didn't say the Alien Enemies Act doesn't allow them to deport it. They just said that they need more notice in order to deport these people. So we'll continue watching. But yeah, it's going to be a developing story for the next few weeks, I'd assume.
And on that note, I have heard plenty of stories just kind of underlining how much the immigration situation has turned around. Like just one case study isn't the word, but just these reporters looking at towns in the Darien Gap that had basically grown up around the fact that millions of people were crossing through this jungle to reach the US. And now they're saying that they see more Venezuelans going south, going back the other way, than going north. That people have really turned around, and now these towns are losing a lot of money because it's not this highway of smuggled people.
Huh. Yeah. I kind of heard rumors that that would happen, but that's actually pretty cool that it's actually happening. That's like the best case scenario that we don't actually have to deport you. You just deport yourself or you turn around on your way here.
And I know it's something people have done a lot to attribute some master plan to what Trump's doing, when in reality it might just be something kind of stupid. But maybe this whole El Salvador thing, because the amount of people that are being deported to El Salvador is pretty small. And El Salvador is only getting $6 million in payments for it. So the amount of money involved isn't that great either. I think
Right.
what it really is, or at least here's a theory, it's publicity, and it's magnifying where the administration is the most popular and showing, yeah, we are being really strong on this. And if you come to the US, there's a chance, even if you're not a gang member, if you're here illegally, you're going to go to places you don't want to go to. And that really will dissuade people from crossing in illegally and possibly crossing legally, which is a problem.
Right, I think it's going to be kind of an issue for the next little while as well, but it's going to be kind of fun to watch. That's my, I mean, that might sound a little bit evil, but it's going to be fun to watch how it plays out just because I like to see how laws and things like that and policies, even if it's a small policy, like you said, small amount of people in El Salvador, that can make a lot of people who are trying to come here illegally worried, and then they might just turn around anyway. Yeah, I like seeing the effects of this type of stuff. So, yeah, it'll be a fun thing to watch. But something that wasn't super fun to watch during the week was the stock market, and
Oh, it just kept slipping.
it did. I'd like to announce that we're both right again. The stock market ended at 39,000 for the Dow Jones.
Who guessed 39,000? I'm forgetting.
I think I did 38 and you did 40. So that's right in between us again.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a huge slip, but it definitely didn't keep recovering.
No. It was up one day, down the next day.
And I think it's fair to say, with the China tariffs, that the stock market ceiling for now is lower. That, like, hopefully we're out of the situation in which we're worrying if there's an imminent like crash or recession, but I doubt it's going to be going up 2,000 this next week.
I think that it's probably going to continue this until we get a break from the actual tariffs.
Yeah, which could be a while. On that topic with the tariff war, I think it's fair to say that now the narrative has fully pivoted to the US-China trade war. That even if there is still unresolved issues with Canada and Mexico and Europe, that really US manufacturers and Chinese manufacturers are wondering, what they can do and how they can take advantage of this. So yeah, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think you're right on that. That's pretty much the entire point of the tariff war, probably at the end of the day, was to try to hurt China. They're just so bad at what they do because they're not, they're not seasoned politicians at this stuff. But yeah, I think that's where it's going. It's entirely just us against them now. And now we have to find replacements for everything we get from China that's hard to find other places.
Yeah. Which one thing kind of concerning but also exciting, I was looking at this morning, is China produces like 70% of the rare earth minerals that we use. And those rare earth minerals just altogether are bits of metal that are used in a lot of high grade electronics. And so the bad news is we don't produce a lot of it. The article I saw said that there's really only one proper rare earth mineral mine in the US. But the good news is, and I think we've said this before, rare earth minerals are not that rare. There's plenty of it in the US. The problem with it, and this is the reason China's so successful at it, is you need to process a lot of rock to get rare earth minerals because they're found kind of everywhere, but they're really sparse in the rock that they're found in. So we're going to need, if we're going to open up our own mines, we're going to need a lot of land, we're going to need a lot of dumping ground, and we're going to need a lot of energy to make that happen. So it's going to be an environmental challenge, which is why China's excelled at it, because they don't care about the environmental challenges.
Right, and that is where the state of Nevada comes in. They're, basically desert. I don't think really anyone cares if we turn half of it into glass, but
There's a reason we tested like half of our nuclear weapons there.
exactly, yeah. There isn't much of an,
Yeah.
yeah, like you said, it's not rare. They're not rare. It's just hard to refine them. And so once we get refineries started. There's a lithium refinery that Tesla is actually building in, where is it? Corpus Christi, I think. Corpus Christi, Texas. I actually saw it when I was on vacation there. It's pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really big. It's pretty cool. But lithium is just one of the types of so-called rare earth metals. That one's not as hard to get to, but there are a bunch of other ones that we use in like fighter jets and whatnot. I think as you keep seeing these refineries and mines start up in the United States, which there is a company called US Rare Earths that's trying to do that, then it will kind of be like a snowball effect. It's kind of just gonna blow up.
Yeah, and it's an obviously important issue. Obvious, it's bipartisan too. Like, I think Democrats justifiably have been quick to hit Republicans on like the economic effects of tariffs, which, I mean, if you're a responsible politician, of course you would. But in principle, from what I've seen, the Democrats are not very much against tariffs as a concept. Especially when we're thinking about tariffs as not trying to destroy our position on the world stage, but give us a basic amount of independence from our main enemy. Like, we can't rely on China for the majority of our high-grade metals.
Right, that I think that's probably why. I think it's more like Republicans like tariffs, and so we put tariffs in place, and now Democrats have to hate them just because it gives them a little bit of credibility in the next election, especially the midterms.
Yeah.
It's the infinite game of politics, but yeah, so moving from the infinite game of politics into a unfortunate game of Katy Perry getting shot up into space and unfortunately coming back. There was an all-female Blue Origin flight. So if you don't know, Blue Origin has this program called the New Shepard. It's like a tiny little rocket, and it those little foam rockets where you like step on an air compressor and they shoot up in the air. It works like that.
Really?
I mean, like you don't. It's not an air compressor. It has an
Yeah,
actual
but
rocket, but
it's just really compressed.
yeah. you shoot it up into the air and then it comes back down. And it happens to get to space, but it doesn't orbit, it doesn't really go anywhere. But yeah. So
It's
it's
very,
like
it is a publicity stunt. Like, that's the reason it was all celebrities.
right.
But it is impressive that it was able to get up 60 miles in 10 minutes. Or I
Yeah,
guess
that
the whole trip
is.
was 10 minutes. So I guess it's 60 miles in 5 minutes. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is really impressive. I mean, we've had huge advances in spaceflight over the past few years, and this showcases it. So I guess on like the concept, I really like the concept. I like rich people being able to pay for a ticket to go up into space for 10 minutes and then come back down. I also like the concept of the submarine that imploded with the Titanic, so I don't know what that says about me, but it's just really cool. I just like tourism and like I like new ideas. So if
Yeah.
maybe make the submarine safer next time. I don't know, but I do find it a little bit unfortunate that Katy Perry thought it would be a good idea to come back. You know,
Yeah.
the International
Yeah.
Space Station could take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, really cool idea. I love it. I don't know how much we have to talk about with Ukraine, but
Nothing much. The front line's been rather stagnant, but there have been, as it's been the case throughout the year, slow Russian advances. They are really intensifying their attacks, even though they are low on their resources. It seems that they've been saving up their armor over the winter. Hardly any Russian tanks were seen on the front over this winter. They were really kind of used in a defensive posture. But now
okay.
that Russia is trying to gain as much land and territory before the foreseeable end of the war, which I don't, it might not be in the next few weeks as I hoped, but it still seems like it is in the next few months. They're really pushing hard with both tanks and also civilian vehicles. It's a kind of strange way to imagine modern warfare, but because they are so depleted in their stockpiles of tanks, they'll have like a wave of civilian vehicles, like motorcycles and trucks, go in the first assault. And that kind of clears ground for the tanks to follow up second.
Huh.
And it's had some success, especially in Kursk. Ukraine hardly controls anything left of it.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, both sides are pretty much depleted on their stockpiles. Russia can keep producing things, Ukraine can't. But it's really interesting to see how their strategies change as their stockpiles get depleted. It kind of In a kind of weird way, it kind of shows how willing both of them are to fight.
Yeah. No, and Ukraine's fighting spirit is like I can't imagine many countries in their position would have stayed fighting in as long.
Right. I mean, not even Poland could do that. So that is a pretty good pretty good fighting spirit. To be fair
Speaking
to
of people
Poland.
backing down, do you think Harvard's gonna do it?
Yeah, I think they are. They get nine, what, $10 billion or something like that from the government.
I think that was the money overall that the government was suspending to these big university programs.
Okay.
I think they're still losing out on millions and millions, that's for sure.
Right. I saw somewhere that at least $2 billion was frozen to Harvard.
Wow.
So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know exactly what that was all going to, but Harvard's pretty hurt. And I know they're a big university, but not even a business can sustain multi-billion-dollar contract losses like that. So
No.
that's
And
devastating.
I mean, from what I've seen, all that the Trump administration has been asking them to do are things that conservatives have been asking for a while, of like ending these DEI practices and kind of leftist ideology classes, making sure that you don't have departments on campus. And I think this is an idea that people have been talking about too much, making sure there's ideological diversity on campus. Because there's some departments, like a communications department, might be 19 hardline liberals and one moderate.
Right.
And that's a little bit of a problem when you're training up the next generation of elite experts. So the Trump administration is making pretty reasonable demands. And this is, I think, if we want to be harsh on Harvard, this is just the deal with the devil that always happens when educational institutions accept public money. This is why a lot of Christian schools will try to not accept public money because the government will use that to control you.
I think that's a really good summary of it and everything. I think, that was a really good summary. I don't have much to add to that. We'll just wait
All right.
until we'll wait until these court cases are sort of done, and then we'll see what Harvard decides to do. Adding to that, so kind of moving on to our eighth point here, we got a. I guess we could probably should have put this with the Ukraine budget, but we have a $1 trillion defense budget. With that, Trump says he's going to approve, and PHAG says that he's going to approve as well. This is all part of like the new budget bill that's passed. Yeah.
How do you justify that? Because in my mind, I'm still stuck on when it was $500 trillion, and now it's twice that in just a few short years. So I'm wondering how we justify that if we're not in wartime.
The way I'm justifying it is we still have, even if we don't want to have this many bases, we still have like 1,000 bases worldwide. And they run up very high costs because, we have to pay the countries and we have to pay the upkeep of our troops and everything like that. We're trying to improve our recruitment. That costs a lot of money. There's an increase in deportation costs. The Air Force has been running into cost problems because they're trying to develop new fighter jets. The Navy has been running into the same thing, except they're not only trying to develop new fighter jets, they're trying to develop new ships and build new shipyards and find recruitment for those shipyards to build a 360 some ship Navy in the next 30 years.
Wow.
So it's just a bunch of semi medium sized things that add up.
And I mean, there's hope that some of this is just money that was previously allocated in different sections of the budget to border control being put in the defense budget because now it's being kind of militarized.
Right. I think that
There's
is part of it.
I heard something about how there's some sections of the border in which the military can't really do anything because border police actions are not falling under defense, the category of defense. So I heard that some sections of the border are actually being turned into military bases, which would free up the military to police it themselves instead of the border patrol, which
Okay, yeah.
I wish I had more to say on that, but that's just something I've heard about.
Yeah, that sounds like a good solution, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So you told me a little bit about this before the show started, but the first ever live colossal squid. This is the first fun story of the day.
I mean, it's not as big as it sounds because the squid is not as big as it sounds. It was just what looked like to be one lost baby colossal squid that got too high up, or got close to the surface. But the important thing is it is alive. And this is a massive sea monster that we've seen dead specimens of that are like 40, 50 feet long, but they've always been dead. And we've seen one living one under the water, which is, yeah, for the first time in history. I imagine if we can create the right kind of submersible that won't end up spooking them, because that's my theory, that the reason we haven't seen any of them is they're easily frightened animals that have the ability to get away from these undersea submersibles. We might actually find a live one day that's full size.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I hope that does happen. I don't know if I'm right or wrong about this, but I heard that they also apparently like live super way down there, you know, and that's not the easiest place to get to, all the way down at the bottom of the ocean, but
No, not at all. People haven't been down there very often. Giant squids have been seen l alive decently often. They've actually been captured to try to raise in captivity, but even in a pressurized tank, they always die. So these are very fickle animals, I guess.
yeah. The giant squids we always find around Japan, I think, which is
Yeah.
interesting. But
This colossal squid was the South Atlantic, I think, which
South
really
Atlantic.
is, yeah, pretty isolated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. Maybe there's a theory there. Maybe a lot of these rarely seen, if not ever seen, sea creatures, maybe they're all just in more isolated areas where there isn't as much shipping or anything like that.
Yeah, we don't see them because they're in like the South Atlantic, South Pacific. And there could be hundreds of thousands of them
Right.
just all hidden away. Who
Yeah.
knows? If there's creatures like this that we only know exist because they washed up ashore, maybe there's a heavy-bodied sea monster 3 times the size of a colossal squid that we just have never, like, it when it dies, it sinks to the bottom of the ocean. So we've never seen one. Just imagine that. That's a possibility, right?
Yeah, that'd be pretty crazy. That'd be like all the scary ship stories from like the 1400s. Maybe they're all true. So moving on to the second fun story of the day and kind of our last story. I know it's a bit of a short episode. There has been possibly there's been a signature of life found beyond the solar system. I'll try to say as much as I can about it. It's a little bit confusing, so I'll try to put it in like human terms as best as I understood it. Because I don't even understand it right. So basically, 125 light years away from Earth, there's another solar system in our galaxy. And there's a planet in that solar system that is twice the size of Earth. Now, what's interesting about this planet is it has a very large amount of water in the atmosphere. So if it has any life on it, it's probably just an ocean planet. It doesn't have any land. On top of that, so in the atmosphere, on top of the like the water and the hydrogen there, there's also an enormous amount of, I'm gonna try to find what they said about this. It's just they put it better than I could. I'm gonna try to find it in the article. I can't find it. Okay, so basically there's a high amount of something there that only marine life on Earth actually produces. And it's not like fish or anything like that, it would be like bacterial life and like algae, but that's still life, so makes
Yeah.
me excited.
I mean, being 120 light years away, it'd be a very hard place to reach. Impossible with our current technology. But it's, yeah, that's a tantalizing prospect.
Right. Okay, so this is the sad part that I have to get to. If there is life there, I can almost guarantee it's not intelligent life. There's a lot of arguments about there not being any intelligent life in the universe except for us anyway. So, on top of that, even if there was intelligent life, or even if we did go there, it's twice the mass of Earth.
It's
It's
not going to
heavy.
be similar to us, that's for sure. It's
Right.
hard to imagine what life would look like if gravity was doubled.
Right, yeah. And there's no oxygen. There's water, as far as we know, there is water, but so we could separate it and like turn it into oxygen, but there's no just regular oxygen.
I guess the pessimistic way to look at it is 120 light years. I'm pretty sure. The most like from the one astronomy class that I took, a lot of the methods for identifying what a planet looks like really fall off after 9 or 10 light years. So by 120 light years, there's very little that we can, like, probably what this article is saying is all we know about the planet. So there could be other factors that it's just impossible for us to tell from this distance, but other factors that make it uninhabitable. That's the pessimistic take.
Yeah, that way to ruin all the fun. that is a very reasonable thing to look at it. So now that we've read this article, I do have to ask you what your opinion is. Do you
What?
think there is actual like creatures outside of Earth?
I've always kind of assumed that life outside of Earth does not seem to fall under the biblical idea of what creation is. And at the same time, the chances of life occurring, just with all the factors involved, it's practically zero. Like, I've always had it in my mind that all the sci-fi stuff about aliens, it's just a convenient way to envision other creation stories without describing a god.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair point. I've always looked at it as it's possible like God doesn't say he didn't create, other creatures. And he doesn't say he did either. So I always look at it as, it's possible maybe he did in other planets and galaxies. But
I think there's been Christian thinkers. I think it was even Tim Keller that was like, yeah, there could be aliens, and if there's aliens, there's probably a gospel for aliens, like they were saved in their own way.
yeah, that could be one way to look at it. Yeah, for sure.
It's just a strange thing to imagine. Maybe a bridge will cross when we get to
Yeah, maybe like 500 years in the future,
it.
and we're, yeah, finally exploring the solar system next to us. But with all that being said, I think we've reached the end of the episode today. I don't actually know if this was shorter than normal. I think it might have been longer. So I
Oh,
think,
there's a lot of interesting things happening.
yeah, there are. And that's a good thing. So we planned on it being shorter, but many interesting things, which is good. Hopefully, we'll have equally as many interesting things next week. We'll keep an eye on the developing situations, like the court cases with Trump's deportations, Harvard, the Ukraine war. We'll keep an eye on those and update you next week, as well as new fun stories in the stock market and everything else that you do and don't want to hear about. So, with that being said, thank you guys for listening. Adios, and God bless you.